So today's episode is the one about vegan food.
Whoa.
What?
It just sounds like a great topic.
Yeah, I think it's like a little light. We started off the season coming in strong. We wanted to have a lighter episode for you that still promotes our core values. We wanted to talk about veganism a little bit more this season. So yeah, we're talking about the one about vegan food and
Let's kind of just jump into it. Making good
I
vegan
was going
food
to read that.
is about having a good relationship to cooking. Let's elaborate.
I don't think it's about having a good relationship to cooking. I think it's understanding that if you're going to partake in eating plant-based, especially if you're doing that on a budget or as someone who is not like loaded, you're going to have to get familiar with the process of cooking food. And you can find recipes that are really easy to make, overnight oats, things that are like pasta dishes, right? That take a few minutes. If you're not really, you don't like cooking, you can do prep all of your ingredients on a Sunday so that throughout the week you have some roasted vegetables, some grains, some vegetables that you can just put into a bowl with a nice sauce and call it a day. Or you can be one of those people who loves to cook. And so you invest in doing like really long recipes, making stews, making more like unctuous
I
meals.
think those are all examples of a good
I
relationship.
think, no, so the first time, I think, like, if you're someone who doesn't really like cooking, you're someone who like doesn't like being in the kitchen, then you recognize that maybe that's a reality for you. And so you adapt the sort of things that you're going to make to that time that you're willing to spend in the kitchen, right? If you're someone who doesn't like to cook, then like you're not going to be out here making what?
I don't know. I feel like there are certain things that, like, as fully fledged, like, adult human
I
beings,
don't think
we
that we
can
should be
afford to
forcing people
like
to
and
like
not
certain
like.
things. I think that like,
But I don't think it's a force, right? It's like, because you can not like brushing your teeth, but it's still good practice to do so. You could
and I'm
not.
not telling people not to cook if they don't like cooking. I'm telling them to do it in a way that meets their
True, true, true.
needs.
Okay. Got it.
What kind of comparison is that also? Because I'm not telling you to just brush your teeth for 30 seconds. I'm telling you to brush your teeth for like the duration of a song. But anyway,
2 minutes.
I'm not a hygienist, so like let's not like get into that. But yeah, just like adapting how you engage in the kitchen to your needs and your wants. As someone who I've been cooking for very many years, I started Z's Cooking Services when I was 8 years old with my sister. And we would like use, it was so funny. We would use all of the ingredients that our parents obviously had for like groceries, and we would just sell it to anyone who came into the house. And so we would be like, oh, like here's our menu. Like, do you want? And my parents would just like laugh. I like in retrospect, I'm like, that was a really funny business model because we were paying for none of the ingredients, none of the utensils, and
Not
then we were
rent. You
charging
were paying for the
and
rent of the building.
nothing. And we would fully charge them, like, back then I ate meat, so we would charge them for like fried egg or like a sandwich with like, anyway, like a BLT, and we would charge them like a full price, like if it was a cafe, and my
Oh my
sister would do like
God.
more of like the drinks, and I would do like the, it was really,
That
really
is
funny.
absurd.
I know. Anyway,
That is
so
absurd.
yeah, but yeah, we had that going, and I've always just been really passionate about cooking.
Would you say that that was like your, what got you passionate about cooking, having it started from like a really young age? Or was it like, were there any moments exactly where that you can pinpoint being like, that's when I started to love cooking?
No, so like I think I've mentioned this in like previous episodes, but I was a kid that was watching reality TV at a very young age. So I was watching a lot of cooking shows, a lot of like HGTV, like Improve Your Home. And I was always just like very passionate about like episodes that related to like being in the kitchen, to cooking, like Rachael Ray, all of these. Yeah, the Food Network was like a fave of mine. And yeah, I just remember watching that and being like, this is so cool that you get to like spend this time like
Just
chilling
getting to
with.
do that.
Yeah,
I will say the
it's
Food Network, that so that if you're
Yeah.
listening in America, you might not have it. Or maybe it was American.
I think it's American,
So the Food
actually.
Network is just, or if you're listening across the pond, the Food Network is a television station
Yeah.
that we get here in North America that's essentially just like all cooking shows. You get like MasterChef, Rachael Ray, You have, like, what are all the other, there's so many. Yeah. There's Diners, Dive-Ins, and Drives, ooh, all of those. It's just, like, they're all these shows. So, yeah. Like, yeah, you can get exposed to it from a very young age.
Yeah.
I think, for me personally, and I think a lot of people might have this too, why they might not like cooking or have, or don't have a quote unquote good relationship with cooking is maybe because of how it played out in their childhood. So I know for me, a lot of the responsibility of, like, cooking family meals and making sure everyone had lunches for school, like, that fell onto me.
Yeah.
And so cooking always, that, or not always, but over time, because of how my siblings interacted with what I made or how my parents interacted with what I made, it became more of a, like, chore, right?
Yeah.
Of this, like, task that I, like, had to do, and I wasn't necessarily, like, getting out of it what I wanted to, but it was, like, this utilitarian thing that I had to do. And so for, I guess, like, in the earliest parts of my childhood, I wasn't the biggest fan of cooking. But then I think when, because I started cooking from a very young age, like, very young.
Same.
I don't know the age, probably like 4 or 5 or something.
Yeah,
but by the time I was 7, right, I remember two things. I remember, one, going to this camp, this, like, sleepaway camp for my first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there that they, like, taught me how to cook over, like, an open fire and, like, make, like, scrambled granola and da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And I felt so empowered by that experience. And then I also remember later that year, it was, I remember this because 7 was a wild year for me. Like, it was so wild that when I turned 8, I kept saying that I was 7 for an entire year afterwards. Like, I just missed out on saying that I was 8 years old, because by the time I was 9, I had just realized. So it's like, anyway, long story short, 7 was a good year. And the second point in which I was 7, where I was like, oh, I love cooking, was I was at daycare.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, they were like, Jalen, come help us cook the hamburgers. At this time, I was still eating meat. And so I, like, cooked these burgers for the kids and for me. And, like, everyone was, like, not only appreciative, so very different from, like, what I was experiencing when I would cook at home.
Yeah.
But also, like, I also liked it. I was like, oh, my God, this tastes really good. And I was like, oh, okay, so I can, like, have fun and do this thing. So I think that's when it starts to change. But I think a lot of people, in order to have sort of that relationship with cooking, need to go at it from a more, like, not necessarily from, like, a selfish point of view, but you have to, like, you have to want to cook to some degree. Like, you have to have, you have to find a reason for yourself, be it just to find sustenance, or be it because it's, like, something that you're curious about or something that you want to learn more about. Like, there are a platitude of reasons why, but you have to have a reason that, like, brings you back to the kitchen.
Yeah. I agree.
But?
No, but it's, like, I was also cooking at a very young age, but I didn't see it as, like, utilitarian for the most part, because I wasn't, like, it wasn't a responsibility necessary. Like, I think at times my parents were like, okay, like, deal, like, do your own dinner, or, like, figure out your lunches. Like, my mom would, I remember in kindergarten, I started, like, pack. So, like, the leftovers would be in the fridge, because my mom would just, like, cook a feast on Sunday. And then throughout the week, we would just, like, take what was in the fridge and, like, make our lunches from that. So from the time I was in first grade, actually, like, I had to pack my lunches for me and my sister.
Same.
And I remember, like, entering high school and my friend's parents were making their lunches.
Yo!
And I was like, what?
Flabbergasted.
I was like,
going to school and being like, oh my God, you get to just ruck up to a lunch prepared for you.
And I remember this because one of my friends at the time had gotten braces. And so I also had braces, but, like, she got them, like, a year after I had mine. And so she had just gotten them tightened. And if you've had braces, it's really painful to eat, like, the next day. And so her mom had given her something that she couldn't eat, like, she had, like, steak or something, and she was complaining about it. She was like, oh my God, I can't believe that my mom packed this for me, da da da. And I was like, honey, like, do you realize that your parents are, like, actually making your lunch?
At the
and I was
big, like, big age of 7, you're like, honey.
I was in eighth grade at the time, and I was like, do you realize you could have made your own lunch?
Yeah.
You knew that you weren't able to digest these different things.
Well,
and
eighth
then
grade,
like,
you're old, you're able
to do that. And so, but I also went to, like, a school with, like, a bunch of, like, privileged white girls, so it's like, interesting for like to say the least. That like kind of relationship to food at first was very like, it was playful and fun. At times it became utilitarian when I had to like pack my own lunches or when I had to like make dinner for my sister and I, but we really had a good time. And I think that like also my dad was a really good cook. Most of like the men in my family actually are like really good cooks. Mm. And so that also like shifted, I guess, the dynamic that a lot of people typically see in their households, where it's like their mom's like the caregiver and the cook and all that stuff. And my mom like tried to, but my dad was just a better cook. And
that so was, it was the like, exact was same so, thing in my household. It was like my mom's meals weren't bad, but we had a lot of microwaved meals when it was like my mom's turn to cook.
Yeah.
I guess earlier on that changed later, but at the start, my dad was also
big cooker. So that was like kind of, just fun. And also we would do like critique. So like if I would make food, then like my sister and my dad would like shimmy in and be like, you know, I like this, but maybe you could add more of this. Like, it was kind of like it turned into like a Chopped, like episode of Chopped, where it's like you have like the judges tasting your food. And so like you present it in a certain way and then they give you feedback, and then we would do each like the same for each other. Like that was like when my parents had separated and it was just like my dad, my sister and I. So we'd kind of like take turns, like make your own food. And like, it was just really fun because it like, we didn't have to coddle each other's egos. Like there were times I remember I made shrimp for the first time and it was barely edible. And that was the feedback that I received. It was literally like, this is barely edible.
Utter trash.
Good for your first
time. Utter garbage.
You know, and then you just take that. You're like, you know what? I'm going to do better next time. And so, yeah, there was always this like, culture of just like bonding over meals, sharing each other's like sharing feedback, and just having a good time in the kitchen. So I think that like my relationship with food now, I don't really see it as a chore, whereas I know that a lot of people are like, even when I post like my what I eat in a day videos, are like, oh my gosh, are you in the kitchen all day? Like I could never do that. And I'm like, number one, like there's no need for you to share that. Like it's like, if you don't want to be in the kitchen, then like that's on you. But you also don't know how much time I spend in the kitchen, because I don't want to say I'm skilled, but like I walk in there, I know what I'm doing and I'm like multitasking. I'm not spending hours on end just like slaving away on a meal. And I think that like that also shows that if you're not practicing your cooking skills, you're going to continue to see it as a chore. You're going to continue to be like, you're going to dread this task because you're not used to doing it. And, you know, it's going to take practice. And if you're speaking to someone who has been cooking since she was like fucking 8 years old, like, and you just never enter the kitchen because you don't like it, like you're going to have to at some point either decide, hey, I don't like being in the kitchen, I don't like to cook, so all my meals are going to be 20 minutes or less, or you're going to take it upon yourself to learn new recipes and exercise that skill, right? And have fun with it. Like, I think that that's another thing too, where I'm like, people will often ask me like, what's the recipe? And that's like one of my least favorite things. I do understand where they're coming from, and I share my recipes on Patreon if you're interested. Also working on an ebook, so hopefully that'll be out sometime this year. But when I share like food pics or like process videos, it's so that you can get inspired. It's not so that like, this shouldn't be prescriptive. Right? I think that people's relationship to food needs to be a little more authentic and a little more intuitive. And the only way that it's going to become intuitive and like authentic is if you experiment and you test and you have fun with it, right? Like, because otherwise you're going to continue to rely on different, like other people's recipes without understanding why you do certain things, right? There are certain processes as you cook that like just come naturally once you've done it a few times, as is with any other skill that you're developing, right? So yeah, it's a muscle that you have to work in order for it to perform really well.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Moving swiftly on to...
transitioning to a plant-based diet.
No. I was going to talk about... okay, sure.
That's how... because we were going to talk about cow cheese addiction, and we are going to talk about it, but I think that it could be... it's better framed if we just talk about like transitioning to a plant-based diet and getting over your cow cheese addiction. So,
well, just maybe like how you can, like, just not necessarily strategies, but I guess strategies.
Yeah.
So like when transitioning, I guess for me, mm-hmm. right? I know that a lot of my diet before was like really not, I wouldn't say super meat heavy, but like fast food meat heavy. So like that kind of like burger, sausages, like pizza, kind of like go-to ready quick kind of meals. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that because that had become a part of my diet, I was going to have to replicate that in some way, mm-hmm. at least for the beginning parts of my transition, as I would then like learn to stop buying so much food, pre-made food, I should say, and then start cooking myself. But yeah, so for me, it was like veganism at the beginning was a little bit expensive because I was buying a lot of meat alternatives, mm-hmm. a lot of like, you know, those Beyond like sausages and Beyond Meat burgers, and like, actually Beyond Meat is not even that like pricey, but comparatively I was like, but just buying a lot of them and buying like, so
it's also become a little more affordable too, over time, which is
nice. Great. Yeah. But in terms of like when I was first starting, I was like, okay, because of the way my diet had been before, like what I got comfortable with, this mm-hmm. is like what I'm going into. But then that also made it easier for me to then transition, because I was like, I don't have the money to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. And it kind of made me think of like, is this actually what meat would cost, like to eat it every day if it wasn't subsidized by the government so intensely? And so I was like, okay, JK, that's a complete tangent. But anyway, so I was like, okay, so I can't afford to do this forever. I'm going to have to like start cooking things that are not just like quick, ready meals. Mm-hmm. And a way of doing that was getting into like my cultural foods that mm-hmm. like I was like, oh my gosh, like there's a way for me to like, one, connect more with my culture, but also like make it affordable, because so much of my cultural staples like Brazilian and Jamaican food is pretty affordable at its core. It's like rice, it's like beans, it's
provision.
Exactly. Yeah. So that like having that sort of click and kind of also push as a result of my wallet being smaller, kind of how I led into my transition. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of parallels for a lot of people, but there's not the only way, right? Because I don't think you were the same.
For sure.
Yeah.
No, so I think when I transitioned, so I transitioned really slowly because of my eating disorder, living at home. So I was like pescatarian for a really long time. And then I slowly made the swap to becoming vegetarian. And then I went plant-based. So it was like very much over time. But the last thing that I stopped consuming was dairy, because I was addicted to cheese, like most people. Because cow cheese has very addictive properties. So cow's milk has casomorphine in it. And that is a substance that is in the milk of cows, so that their babies come back to them and are able to grow very quickly. And so their milk is actually a little bit addictive, so that to like reinforce that process. And that's only the case with like cow's milk, right? So you can only imagine what happens in terms of the casomorphine concentration in cow cheese, because it's literally just concentrated cow's milk. And so you add that casomorphine, you add the salt, you add the fat, it has all of the properties, the texture as well, all of the properties to keep you addicted. Right. And so that was something that I really had to wean myself off of, for lack of a better word. And my friend Alex, actually, I met her after I went vegan, but one of her tips is to completely go, I don't want to use the term cold turkey, but to cut out cow cheese for up to 3 weeks. I would say like 1 to 3 weeks, ideally 3 weeks, because it does take 3 weeks for you to like incorporate a new habit. And then after that, introduce plant-based cheeses. What this is going to do, one, you're going to learn how to cook a meal without slabbing cheese onto it, and also without like relying on cheese as a snack. Like, I feel like for myself at least, I would literally just go and heat up a little piece of cheese and eat it by the spoonful sometimes. Like, it was disgusting. And so just getting out of that mentality of seeing cow cheese as like a staple food in your diet is really key. And the only way that you're going to truly make that switch is if you divest from it. If you make it a point to not consume cow cheese for
you have to, you have to make it a point. I think
you have to, and it's going to be a concerted effort.
And it's hard. It was hard.
You might like slip up, and that's okay. Like, just get back on as soon as you fuck up, like just get back onto it. And once you do that, then you could reintroduce plant-based cheeses, please note that they are different, okay? It's going to give you that same, like, cheese essence, that cheese, like, flavor, but it's not going to be the same. And I'm going to need us to remember why you're doing this. You're not consuming plant-based cheese because you think it's the best thing that the world has to offer. You're doing this because you don't believe in the exploitation of other animals. And if you don't believe in the continued exploitation of other animals, you're not going to consume cow cheese. You're not going to consume cow milk. And so please remember, like, when I was going vegan, one of the things that I reminded myself of was life over taste. Mm-hmm. Whenever I had those, like, cravings, those whatever, I would always remind myself, why am I doing this? And I was like, oh, right. I'm doing this because I want to live in line with my beliefs. And if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to persist. And the good thing with getting over your cow cheese addiction is that you won't always be addicted. Okay. I'm almost 4 years into my veganism, and there's nothing about cow cheese that is appealing to me.
Or any cheese, to be honest. Because I was a huge goat cheese slut. I would literally get a tube of goat cheese and put it in everything. Everything. Ooh. I'm making burgers, sure, put it on top. I'm making pasta, sure, squirt it inside. I'm making literally any dish. It could probably have some goat cheese. I was that big. But I think for me, I don't know, I'm much more like, when it comes to things like this, I'm much more like, I don't know, once the logic is very much pointed out, or once it's very, when, like, as soon as I can see myself participating in, like, the fallacy, logically, I'm like, oh, okay, done, bet. Yeah. Like, it can't. Like, it's immediate, like, I don't need any other justification other than it's like, oh, it's wrong. Like, it's straight up wrong. Like, what you thought was incorrect. And so it'd be like, that was the same thing for me. For like the first year of my veganism, I was like, and honey's okay. And it's fine because I support the bees and it's like environmental and rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, okay, let me research this. Finds out all of the atrocities and horrors that is the North American / the global honey industry, if we want to get into that. That's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. But let alone, there are just so many different facets of why honey is actually both environmentally detrimental and wrong, like, to consume. So I was just like, this is wrong. Like, logically, all of the things that why you were doing this, or why you were justifying why you could do this, were wrong. And then as soon as that, it's like, realized, it's like, okay, done, behavior changed.
And if you're curious as to, like, the whole honey debacle, you should listen to the episode about, I think we discussed this in the one about vegan misconceptions. And Jalen also has a really good post on his, like, food Instagram, Jalen the Vegan. I will refer to people to that account all the time, because they have a post about, like, eggs, like the egg industry, one about cow cheese, and then another one about honey. It's a go-to. You should check that out on Instagram if you're looking to, like, learn about, like, why honey is not vegan and other tangent things. So I guess, like, we discussed what cow cheese addiction, our relationship to cooking,
our transition. Let's talk about, you know what we need to move swiftly into? Seasoning.
Another thing, you always say swiftly. It's not that swift. It's really not that swift.
I think we're moving cool as cucumbers, rolling off the back of a truck.
You see, you always say that too. Rolling off of that. It's like we just...
Building off of this point. Yes, exactly. Per my last email. You know what? Okay, this is... Let me talk. Anyway.
You know what? It's fine. You gotta infuse it in the podcast.
Okay, so moving sluggishly on to... Seasoning!
Yeah, so...
Spice, pepper, cayenne.
Cumin. I'm not
gonna make cardamom. Sound. Bring it up, up, up. Spice it up. Track drops this April. Okay, seasoning.
It's really important for you to season your food.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people have this idea that when you eat plant based, you're giving up certain textures, certain, like, flavors, and the gag is that you have to learn how to replicate those textures. The flavors come intuitively because you can use literally the same seasonings that you use for, like, animal-based products.
Yeah.
And put those onto plants.
That's the gag.
The seasonings that you're using, like, why meat tastes so good, quote unquote, is because you're seasoning it with plants. And that is in and of itself vegan. So you don't have to worry about like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Like, just like figure out how to like, you know.
Replicate the texture. We were talking about this. It's like, it's actually really easy if one of your biggest hangups, right? Yeah. If like, if you are fine with everything else, but you are like, you eat meat because of the flavor. Then it's like, okay, well, that's actually super easy to replicate. Like, because as you were saying, all flavors, the majority of flavors are all vegan, unless you're like talking about like some sort of bone broth or something, which is like, there are veggie stocks and veggie broths that are, and mushroom broths and mushroom stocks that are amazing.
So good. Yeah.
So it's like, when it comes to the actual replication of flavors, that's not that hard to do. So a lot of vegan food, or the where the fun comes in, actually, at least for us, is like replicating those textures, right? And how you recreate the textures that you are, that that you grew up with or you're familiar with, or ones that you want, you know, like, because with vegan, you could actually do so many, like, you, for example, one of, I used to love chicken wings, hated bones. Why were they there?
It was always kind of weird.
Vegan chicken wings,
ligaments,
no bones. You just can make, it's just like a giant chunky, and you can create the same texture and the same flavor. You know what I'm saying? You can actually make your food better. You can have better experiences with your food.
You're actually missing out, I feel.
Like
if you're, so, and it's like you end up testing on so many more things. Like, you don't realize how limited your diet is when you eat animals, because you're basically rotating like the same six animals on rotation. Like, you'll have your like chicken breast and then your tuna, and then, but you're always eating the same things. Whereas like when you go vegan, like there are so many different ways to make a bolognese.
There are,
you could
so,
use
walnuts,
lentils, you could use walnuts, you could use
TVP,
mushrooms, you could use TVP, which is texturized vegetable protein.
You can
protein.
Use meat replacement.
Meat replacements, like Beyond Meat. Like, that's already like five different ways that you could replicate a bolognese that you would just use beef for. And every different
one has
a slightly different flavor profile.
Like,
that's like TVP gives me more like ground turkey vibes. It gives me like that kind of like lighter. The Beyond Beef obviously is a little more reminiscent of like animal beef. Like the mushroom.
But there's
so
much more to, because you have tofu, you have tempeh, you have you also have vegetables themselves. You have ways of changing the texture of potatoes, of tomatoes, of
I use tomatoes
literally
to make salmon and like sushi.
Of you can use so watermelon to make tuna.
Yeah.
It's
like chickpea tuna, like you mash that up.
Yeah,
you put some mayo,
it's just like,
you put some celery,
and that's what's
and
so
it
fun about it too.
To,
is
like
when you start to see ingredients as being completely capable of being whatever you want them to be, then you're like, oh my gosh, let's have fun with it. You look at a can of chickpeas in the store, and you're like, I could turn you into a turkey. Or I could turn you into whatever like
whatever
meal you're trying to make. You know, you buy pasta, and then you look at a potato, carrot, and then turmeric. You're like, I got cheese sauce with some onion, some garlic. Like, there are so many different ways of making cheese.
Yeah.
Also, as vegan, people be like, that's one thing that actually really wilds me if we're on this like seasoning thing and flavor profile thing. Is people be like, oh, a vegan cheese doesn't taste good. One, again, as you were saying, decenter cheese from your diet does not have to be there, first of all. Second of all, there are so many different ways to make cheese that are not based in a bacterial culture.
Yeah.
You like,
and
which,
this idea of like, oh, I just can't give this one item up. It's like, you're taking something that never belonged to you in the first place. You know what I mean?
Ooh,
like,
you're saying,
I can't give up cheese. It's not yours to have in the first place.
Yeah.
Though. So it's like, let's go back.
Because are you having human cheese? That, you know what I'm saying? Listen to that. And if that grossed you out, you know where you stand with cheese then.
Yeah.
You know where you are.
Yeah.
If you are like, oh, human cheese is not an appealing thing to me.
That
means that you know where you stand with cheese.
Yeah.
You know where it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Where you should stand.
Where you should.
If you weren't
conditioned
these, like, cognitive biases.
Yeah. So
that's it, I guess, on seasoning your food. Maybe we could talk about like seeking out recipes.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. The etiquette of that too. Yeah. Let's do that.
So how did you go about like seeking out new recipes and trying different stuff out?
So I think I mentioned this briefly earlier on in the episode, but really trying to look for my cultural based recipes, so Brazilian and Jamaican foods. Not like anything like super fancy or anything, usually just like super simple, just like staples, like arroz and feijão, right? Like coxinhas. I guess that would be like one of the most fanciest. There's like tropeira, I think that's how you'd say it. I actually don't know the pronunciation of that one. Like how to replicate like jerk seasoning, for example. How to like...
You can just buy jerk
seasoning.
We need to buy that. We don't have jerk seasoning. It's,
that's the gag. How to replicate things like, you know, like oxtail, that kind of like texture and flavor, and just seeing that there is such a range, right? Yeah. And when you go out of your way to like look at these cultural recipes, you like actually find things that you're like, what the hell? I've never even heard of this. Jackfruit?
Yeah.
I was like, what? I literally, if I never had heard of that.
Yeah.
I was like, and it's this magical fruit that takes on...
I'm actually not a fan of
You're
jackfruit.
Not a fan. I was talking and about I know,
this with my friend Emily.
I like it. To be honest, I think it takes on, it can take on so many different flavors.
Just know that it's not everyone has this opinion on jackfruit. Like, I would prefer mushrooms to jackfruit, like, in a lot of cases. Like, if you're doing, like,
a pulled pork?
Yes, with mushrooms for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
If you shred an oyster mushroom.
True, I can see that. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
As opposed, because for me, the
what about like a what about a goat replicate? Like, that, like, kind
I
of, like.
I find that.
That stringy kind of chunky chew.
Okay. You know what goat tastes like? I haven't had that, like. There's just too much acidity in the jackfruit for me, and it just
acidity.
And it doesn't give me that same chewy, rubbery texture that I can replicate easily with mushrooms.
Have you frozen your jackfruit?
I have not.
Okay, the gag is, listeners, that's the secret.
And also, freezing your tofu is another secret to preparing tofu that a lot of people don't do. So, like, pressing, I think, is one.
Yes.
You got all the liquids. But again, it depends on what kind of recipe you're making.
You're
I find that if you're making a tofu scramble, it's not as imperative
not
to squeeze it out because
important.
You actually do want to have a little
some
bit
of
that,
those
like,
juices.
That juice in.
Yeah.
But if you're making, like a tofu chicken or, like, a tofu fish recipe.
Get all the water
out. You want to get all the water out. And if you do, like, if you want to do, like, fried, like, chicken nuggets with, like, tofu, if you do the freezer method, so, like, I freeze the tofu, then I defrost it, I squeeze it out,
then
I
freeze you freeze it again.
It creates these little, like,
air
pockets that just absorb any juice that you put it in. And when you cook it, it has that really chewy texture.
So chewy.
Exactly. And it's something that you can't really replicate if you're not doing the freezer method. I think it's just less chewy. So that's also another way that you can work on replicating textures, right? Because we spoke about seasoning your food. Okay, that's great. But also getting those textures in, there are ways that you can manipulate items and ingredients for them to fit what you want them to do.
And the gag is so many meals also, when you're looking at recipes, you begin to realize it's like, you're not actually changing that much. Mm-hmm. Like there's maybe like a couple actually of ingredients that you're changing. Like when I look at recipes like tortilla de patata, for example, which are all about like adding your own sort of creative twists to it.
Yeah.
But the base recipe doesn't change. It's like potato, it's onion, it's a little bit of garlic. Right? And then the binder is egg.
Mm-hmm.
Super easy to replace that with some chickpea flour, right?
Yeah.
If you look at, it's the same goes for so many meals. If you're actually looking at what is in the meal, if it's just like some flavored meat as the staple, as the center, super replaceable actually, right? What about you? What were some recipes, I guess, that, or some sources of recipes for you?
What?
Yams.
Yeah.
Sweet potato.
What about it?
Soul.
Sweet
what are
potato soul.
What were some of your sources of recipes when you were going vegan?
So I think I followed way before I went vegan, I'd follow like a few like vegan recipe creators. One of them is Sweet Potato Soul.
Yeah.
I actually named my Finsta after her. So it's Sweet Potato Titties. She doesn't know this. I know. She doesn't know this. She doesn't know me. But I really do love Janae. I think that she does like an amazing job with like her platform, sharing recipes, and yeah, everything she makes is just like really good and has this like relatable aspect to it. She's also Black, and yeah, I just like love her a bunch. And I haven't like made any of her recipes verbatim. I don't know if verbatim is like well used in this instance, but she has like a YouTube channel that I love as well. So like she has this video about how to make the perfect salad. And that was a real game changer for me.
You're right. So yeah, that is like, a big changer.
Yeah, she talks about like how the dressing needs to have like a sweet factor, a salt, or like a like acidity. Savory, and then an acidity. And so, and you could switch those up to your liking. Yeah. So for me, I was making salad just with like olive oil and balsamic vinegar, like all the time. And then she's like, no, you could actually use tahini as the base in terms of giving you that like fat or that like whatever thing. And then having, or you could have a peanut-based dressing, which also, you know, has that fat texture, but you could put some soy sauce into it. Then you could add some sriracha if you want, or you can add, you know,
especially with like, salads too. Yeah. And I think with her account does a really good job of emphasizing you should have a range of textures in your salad, right? And people be like, oh, I'm a vegan, we eat a salad, that's not going to be good enough. I'm like, you know, salads can have more than three things.
Exactly.
They can actually have 12 things.
Yeah, exactly.
They can have
five. And it doesn't have to be like lettuce heavy, right? Yeah. I think that a lot of people think of salads as like a ton of salad and then like a little bit of toppings. It's like, no, actually, you can fit that ratio to work for you. If you're someone who doesn't really enjoy eating lettuce, depending on how it's worked,
try cabbage.
Yeah, you can also have like a Buddha bowl type thing or a power bowl.
Yeah, like with a grain.
You have like the quinoa, you have more grains, you know, brown rice or whatever. And then you'll have like lettuce on the side and then you'll have all of your toppings. Like personally, for me, my salads are usually half toppings, half lettuce because I'm just not a fan of.
I don't even use lettuce, to be honest. Like, I'm not the biggest lettuce fan when it comes to salad. Yeah. I'm more of like I'm a dill, I'm a spinach, I'm like I'm a cabbage kind of hoe, you know? Yeah. Lettuce is just, it's not my tea.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be yours either.
And it doesn't have to be. So yeah, I think that's like about seeking out recipes is following people that you like.
What about like when it comes to like the etiquette of recipes, like both like asking for, like when it comes to people like you who are like creating content and putting them out there, or like when you yourself are sourcing or developing recipes? Do you want to speak to that a bit?
Sure. So I currently share recipes on Patreon, and I'm working on getting an ebook so that like some recipes are there for people to access. But when making recipes, you do have to replicate it a few times in order to make sure that it is replicable and that it like tastes the same on multiple occasions. Make sure that you're not switching anything up. And because I'm not someone with like a ton of money, it does require a lot of resources, right? It takes time and it also takes money in terms of like buying these ingredients to replicate this recipe. And so when you see someone sharing a meal on Instagram and they haven't shared the recipe, it could be that they're still working on perfecting the recipe. It could be that they're saving it for an ebook or something like that, because we know how the internet works. It's very easy for someone
to move mad.
So it's very easy for someone to mad. See the recipe, take it and include it in their ebook.
Yeah.
Or take it and like
literally steal it
and share it on their platform.
Yeah.
So it's normal for a lot of recipe creators to safeguard some of these recipes, either through sharing them on a like safe platform, right? Where it's like a paid subscription type exchange. So you can ensure that the people at least who are accessing your recipes have contributed to that work, right? Or you could just save it for an ebook so that's way more accessible for more people. But to ask someone to share a recipe if they haven't necessarily like shared that with you, I think is like, it's not always out of line. I think that it comes from a good place. But please respect someone's boundaries, right? If someone tells you, I don't have a recipe for this, it could be that they have one. They're just not willing to share it for free on social media. And I think that that is completely fine and completely okay. Like, we have to normalize that practice, because it's like you're asking me for the blueprint of something that took me years to perfect, years to work on, right?
And often,
make recipes with the, like, sometimes I'll make the recipe with the intent of, I'll make a meal with the intent of sharing this recipe, right? So I'll make sure that I note things down, that I'm, like, diligent about my process. But other times when I'm cooking, for me, it's fun. Yeah. I'm in there. I'm having a good time. I'm sorry. I'm not measuring things. I'm not calculating things. I'm not like timing my process.
Oh my God. I'm the worst for that, right?
So it's like when you ask me for a recipe, then you're forcing me to package my creative process in a way that you can also replicate it. And I think that that comes back to our first point about getting familiar with cooking and developing your own practice around cooking and like creating recipes and creating meals for yourself, because like once you start doing that, you'll realize that like cooking can come intuitively, right? And you don't necessarily always have to have a recipe in front of you that you could copy paste what that person is doing, because maybe that can also steal your joy, right? I think that replicating a recipe, especially if it's for something that's like very specific, can be very useful, right?
If you're trying to make a souffle, obviously it would follow a recipe.
But if you're trying to make like spaghetti, pesto, like you should.
Pesto, I think, is even that's kind of specific. Like
you think?
I think for some it is. Like if you're trying to make like literally pasta, generic category. If you're trying to make salad, generic category. If you're trying to, like, you know what I'm saying? Like
oatmeal, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I feel like
there's
certain things that you have to try out yourself.
And what you like.
Exactly. And it's like, what I like is maybe not what you're going to like. And so, yeah, just like being mindful of respecting people's, what?
Oh, I was trying to make a joke about like when I cook, because I like my food soft.
True. Oh my gosh.
You like your team al dente.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We bash heads a lot in the kitchen, but.
In a good way. Yeah.
And so, yeah, different strokes for different folks. And please just respect people's boundaries when you're asking for recipes. No one owes you a recipe, right?
No.
You need to get out of this habit of like, oh, well, if you're sharing the food, then like we need the recipe. No, not at all.
But also this is the gag, right? Is that we live in a world where there is like a lot of information.
There are so many free recipes.
Right? And it's like, I'm sure that there is some form of what I have made available to you online. And remember, like, and if you go back and see, I do on occasion go out of my way to like write down my recipes and share them. So like know that that is something I'm willing to do and that I do when I feel comfortable, but it is not something I'm doing here. And if you would like, please go and find your own means. Mm-hmm. And I think, that it comes down to, again, like forming that relationship in the kitchen, having a relationship with cooking, but it coming down to you have to have your own motivation for it, right? Yeah. Which I think, and to be honest, like if it is just purely survival, right? Actually, I'm not going to speak on that because I'm sitting in an extremely privileged position where my food doesn't have to be based around survival anymore.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah, all the time. So, I won't speak from that, but I'll just say that you should find reasons, actually, multiple reasons why you are going to the kitchen and why you are learning to cook and why you are developing a relationship with food that is specific to you. And with that, maybe let's kind of end with what are some of your like favorite veganized or meals to veganize?
I don't know if I would. I mean, I have a few, but I think that like for someone who is considering going vegan, one of the most important tips that I can give you, besides getting over your cow cheese addiction, is veganizing your favorite meals.
And eggs. A lot of people are addicted to eggs.
Yes.
Like me.
Yes.
I was addicted.
Like, yeah. Veganizing your favorite meals is really key because you don't have to eat different foods when you go vegan. Like when I first went vegan, I thought that I had to like drink green juices every day and like have smoothie bowls all the time. And like, it's funny because now I eat them pretty often because I like them.
That is
but
the
you
gag.
Don't. Oh my gosh. But you, you don't have to like create a new persona for yourself or like completely change the repertoire of foods that you currently eat. You simply have to veganize the meals that you already eat. And I think that that is a way to make sure that when you go vegan, you're able to maintain it long term because you're not longing for these foods that you no longer have access to.
Except there are some.
What do you mean?
Like eggs.
Well, you'll make it in a vegan version, right?
Yeah.
So you'll have tofu scramble. or you'll have, you can do Eggs Benedict.
Yeah.
You
can, I will say the only one, eggs. I think one for a lot of people though, is hard boiled eggs, which I personally have yet to see.
Well, maybe you're just going to have to get over that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there are a couple that you actually will just have, like, I want people to acknowledge that that's a reality. It's like,
you're going to have
to say goodbye to some things because they are not yours to hold on to.
True.
But for the majority of things, there is actually alternative and vegan ways to directly replicate it.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there are some.
Yeah, so like that is a really important part of going vegan is veganizing the meals that you currently eat. And then another one is transitioning slowly. Mm. So I think that a lot of people want to go vegan like overnight, or they're like, okay, you know what?
Oh,
tomorrow's
yeah.
the day I'm going to go vegan. And I'm like, it can take you days, it can take you weeks, it can take you months, it could even take you years, potentially. I think that in 2021, it shouldn't be taking you years to make that transition because it is so much more accepted. There are more resources out there. There's a larger community. But you need to transition at your own pace. So when I hear people say, oh, I tried to go vegan, but then like, I couldn't keep it up. It's because you transitioned too quickly. And I know that for a lot of people, they're like, oh, well, you know, I took a few weeks. Maybe you need a few months, right? And for me, what worked was swapping one item a week. And it was very specific. I didn't tell myself, okay, you're going to cut out dairy this week. I said, this week, you're going to cut out creamer in your coffee. You're either going to drink it black or you're going to find a plant-based creamer for your coffee. Those are your two options. And so I did that for a week. If I was able to sustain that, I would maybe do another swap the next week. Otherwise, I would just be like, you know what? This is a huge swap for me. Let me give myself 2 weeks to adapt to this swap. And then the following week, you could swap something else and so on and so forth until you realize, oh, I'm basically eating a plant-based diet. And then going vegan doesn't seem as daunting. But if you try to do the switch overnight, it can lead to a lot of frustration and a lot of yo-yoing because you like committed to this one thing and then you weren't able to sustain those behaviors because you just transitioned too quickly. And I think that another point that's important to know, which we talk about in our episode about speciesism, is that you didn't learn about speciesism overnight. You didn't learn that certain animals were quote unquote meant for food overnight. Mm-hmm. And so you're not going to unlearn that overnight either. You have to give yourself
time. Maybe, but most are not.
Most people are not able to make that connection and sustain it long term.
Yeah.
So you have to give yourself the time to unlearn those behaviors. And rather than focus on those dietary swaps that you're making, maybe you take the time to read about speciesism. Take the time to look at your life and see how you uphold that system. See how you can make other behavioral changes other than food to transition to a vegan lifestyle, right? It's all about seeing it on a holistic basis and considering this as a long time thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're seeing this as like, oh, I have to do this now, I have to do like, you're not, the foresight is just not there and your execution is going to be lacking because you're not going to have implemented those skills that are going to enable you to be vegan long term. And the last thing we want is for you to say that you're vegan and then end up like one of those people who's like,
Miley Cyrus, I'm no longer vegan,
you know? So it's like, when you do it, just make sure that you're ready. And if you're not ready, transition slowly. I think that that's really, really important.
And if you make a mistake, just give yourself space to make mistakes.
Yes.
Like, you are allowed to, one, make mistakes. You're allowed to have slip ups. You don't have to be perfect. I think one of the barriers for a lot of people to go vegan, I think, socially at least, is this idea that you have to, like, once you're vegan, it's now like this, like, title, and if you like slip up once, you cannot claim it. It's like, no, like, veganism and like the practice of being veganism, it's a practice, it's a verb, it is an action that you are doing continuously, and it requires your constant participation in it. And if you make a mistake, that's okay, right? You use that as an opportunity to learn from it.
And I also think that, like, there's, like, when I first went vegan, I didn't really call myself vegan because I knew that I had an affliction with cow cheese. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this long term. And so I just called myself plant-based.
Yeah.
Like, my family, I called myself vegan because they knew that I was still learning and that I was on that journey. But I didn't label myself publicly as vegan because I didn't want people to think that vegans ate cheese, because vegans don't eat cheese.
No.
When you're transitioning, right? It's normal to slip up. And so because of that, I would strongly urge you to maybe embrace the term plant-based before you take on the label of being vegan. And that isn't to gatekeep it. It's just to prevent certain misunderstandings that can happen. So for instance, I'm just going to share an example that has happened to me. So I went to this this chilling in Jerry Park with this guy that I was seeing at the time.
This example.
Did I mention it already?
I think you did.
Oh no.
I don't think we can go.
Well,
into...
I can. I have another example.
Okay. Too. Yeah. Go to that one.
So I went to a restaurant once and I ordered a pad thai and I asked them if it was vegan. They're like, "Yeah, it's vegan."
I think you brought this up too.
Well, you know what? Whatever. It's fine. I'm never gonna make it again. And they were like, so I got it and there was eggs in the pad thai. And I was like, no. Oh, I think that there are eggs in this. And they were like, yeah.
Of course.
And they were like, yeah, and. And I was like, eggs are not vegan. And then they were like, oh, well, there was a vegan who came here and who ate this and was fine with it. And like, how do I then tell this server who is just doing their job that vegans don't eat eggs, and the person who ate this pad thai was not actually vegan, may have been transitioning, may have been vegetarian, may have been mislabeling themselves, and now I'm seen as a difficult customer. And so I think that it's really important if you're transitioning towards a vegan diet, if you're not vegan, to just embrace the term plant-based, because mislabeling yourself can cause adverse consequences for those of us who are living in line with the belief of veganism.
I have actually a quick one too.
Go for it.
I was in a similar boat being like, okay, I won't really like publicly claim this, label to say of veganism yet.
Yeah.
But then I started to claim it publicly and I was still on my honey nonsense. Cut to me learning about honey and then my friends being like, wait, what do you mean? I thought that this was vegan. And then I'm like, no, it's an animal product. And then having them being like, wait, bees are animals? And I'm like, so then I had to like start this whole like, oh, okay. So this is the consequence, not the consequence, but this is what can happen when people don't have a connection to the words that you're using. And it's like, oh yeah, when people are like animals, I'm like, okay, so clearly you don't, you have been told what an animal is and that does not include bugs.
I think that's also funny because people will think that like pescatarian is like
because fish, anything that
fish are plants,
and that's the gag is that especially having so many conversations about animals specifically with people online is that the further something is away from like a looking recognizable like a mammal, it is less. It's not going to even be recognized as an animal. Somehow, it just doesn't even make its way into the kingdom. There are people that don't even think of birds as animals. And I'm like, what do you think of them as? Like, with people who don't think of fish as animals or insects as animals, I'm like, so what are they? Like, what? Like,
I think for me, being a pescatarian for so long, I was just not able to recognize their sentience. Because they were further from me in terms of like the fact that they're not mammals and the fact that like people have all of these theories about how like they feel pain differently. And it's just easier to other them as opposed to like a cow or a chicken or whatever that like is similar to like maybe the pets that I would have in my like in my whatever in my life. And so we spoke about this too in the episode about speciesism, but I think that like that's where some of the disconnect can happen. It's like we can't. We don't see ourselves connected to them, and so they don't matter. And that's a huge problem.
That is true, but we're also not there. I think there's another problem is we're not like spending time because of that, right? It's kind of like this negative loop. It's like because we don't care about animals in like an authentic way, and not everyone, this is a generalization, but because like the masses don't care about animals in an authentic way, then there isn't like money and research opportunities and da 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 for people to go out and investigate the capacity of animals in a more authentic realm. So it's like we're just now in 2020, right, producing studies of like what does collective consciousness look like across insect colonies? Like, sure. So what does it mean if you look at the neurons in a single ant, as opposed to the collective of neurons distributed across a space, as a collective, all acting and working as one. So looking at brains as something more than just occupying one space, right? Looking at intelligence as something that exists outside of human understanding of intelligence, like trying to really bridge that cognitive dissonance that happens with people mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, if I can't recognize the intelligence in this, then I don't see it as a being or worthy of living. And it's like,
that's really dangerous.
That is, and this is a huge tangent because we're talking about food.
But it also trickles into how we treat each other as human beings, right? If we're not able to extend compassion to individuals who occupy different species than we do, then it's very telling that like within our own species, we would have problems, right? We would have things like racism and xenophobia and homophobia and the works, right? Because if we're not even able to, it's just not a far stretch that we're not able to extend compassion to other individuals that are non-human, because many of us are not even able to extend compassion to other human beings, right?
But we want to extend compassion to all you non-cookers out there.
Yeah.
On your cooking journey.
That is the objective of this episode. So we want to make vegan food seem less daunting.
Less scary.
That's what daunting means. We want to provide you with some tips and tricks to veganize your life and transition at your own pace. And so I think this like brings us to our case study.
Okay, and here we are. That's right. Read the receipts. Okay, RCR. So for this case study, we're going to be looking into accounts that we love or just that we have engaged with to not only get, you know, inspiration for vegan recipes, but that are just doing the most, doing all the bops, putting out all of the great vegan content for y'all mm-hmm. For free. And amazingly. Yeah. So, you can go and check out. Do you want to go off first or?
Yeah, I'll just like list off a few accounts that I love. So one of them is RG Vegan Food. So he shares like Caribbean vegan dishes that are always mouth watering. Mm. I purchased his ebook. Like he had this like sale going on for Black Friday. And no regrets. I'm not someone who follows recipes really, but his food just looks amazing. And his ebooks are really, really affordable too. So like, even if you're just like looking at these pics to give you like inspiration, I think especially as someone who is—
The pics are stunning.
They're stunning.
They're absolutely amazing.
And if you're like Caribbean and you wanna go vegan and you're like, I don't know, he definitely rewrites the script for vegan Caribbean food. So you should definitely check him out. One of my faves. What's one of your fave accounts?
Oh, Melinda. I should look up what their actual name. I think it's Kindred, like vegan souls.
She's a triplet. Did you know that?
Okay. What?
Yes.
Okay, that is so—
That's
cool.
That's so random.
Okay, no, did not know that. Yeah. I actually, they don't have their pronouns in their bio, so I don't know what their pronouns are, but they are— Their post, sorry, they posted this thing. I think I commented on it like 30 times because I was like, gag. They posted it back in like November, beginning of December. It was like this 3-layered vegan cake. And you know, the gag is I'm not even a desserts person. Mm-hmm. I'm not a sweets person. That's the one right there. When I saw that, I was like, what in the tomfoolery? This—
I don't think you're using tomfoolery correctly.
No, I know I'm not. I'm using it hyperbolically. And yeah. Anyway, I was just like, this is amazing. Their photos are always really good. And their recipe, like what they post just gets me like thinking about making similar things. I'm like, I never would like have made that. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but actually seems super simple. Like, I think, was it them? I think it was them that got me to make the vegan Reese's Pieces.
Could be.
Because I was like, oh, that's actually not tricky. That's actually not hard. Also, bam. Mm-hmm. Let's get it. I love Reese's Pieces. What's another account that you— Are these all Instagram? We should clarify. These are Instagram accounts.
These are all like Instagram accounts that you should follow. So many of them also have like TikTok accounts.
That's true.
One of my faves is Just One Gersha. So
yes,
yeah, she is a wellness coach, home cook, and spice queen. She also has a podcast that you should check out. It's called Vegan for the Culture. I actually was featured on one of her episodes, and it was like one of the most fun interviews that I've done. But yeah, she really inspires you to cook with some seasoning, some flavor, and really just putting soul back into your cooking. And yeah, just like looking at like all of the tips that she provides. She also does like is taking on clients to help them like veganize their life and stuff. So I think that that's a really good resource. If you're like, I don't know what to do, you should check out Just One Gersha for food inspo and actual tips and resources to go vegan. So yeah, definitely love her account.
Shall I take it? Should I take the next one?
Yeah, we should just do one.
Yeah, okay. Because I am obsessed. I mean, granted, I think it was you that actually introduced us. But Arn... Level One Vegan.
Yes!
Absolutely.
Yes, my boy.
Amazing. Yeah. Filipino vegan recipes out the wazoo. Literally TikTok famous. Like, it blowing up on IG.
He was at like 400 followers.
He literally was
at 11K.
11K
yeah.
And like 30K on a TikTok. He's just like... you know what? It's because of excellence. He's literally speaking excellence. And I truly think that he is showcasing, right? Not only like the power in embracing your cultural foods, but in forming that relationship with food in an authentic way that's with veganism, right? Yeah. And so I think it resonates with a lot of people because it's so authentic. They just come through. You can see in each post, in each video, they're doing bops and bits and the most. And I just come through Level One Vegan as an inspo. Mm-hmm. Amazing recipes. When I say like amazing.
Level One, honestly, that's their account.
They could be level 10,
yeah.
100.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love them.
Another one of our faves is Shamelessly Fabulous. So... she also is
on TikTok. I love them. Oh.
So Andrea is just like the best. Her vibes are just you know when someone vibrates at just a really high frequency?
Yeah.
That is her. Always good vibes, always positive like energy. She shares really like good recipes. She'll like, for me, I take it more as like inspo on how to make like whole food plant-based eating interesting. So I think that she does incorporate a lot of like vegetables, a lot of whole grains, a lot of fruits, and it is like healthy, quote unquote, but I think that she just adds that little like that spice, that flavor, that like oomph to it that makes plant-based eating seem delicious. So yeah, Shamelessly Fabulous. You can find her on Instagram and on TikTok as well. Also great for like motivational, like just like pep talks. And like, I love her account. Someone else you want to shout out?
I'm actually just quickly chatting with Level One Vegan right now.
Wow, that's really great that you're doing that on air while we're recording the podcast. I will shout out Level One of my favorite accounts.
Okay.
So Green Nana Bowl, I think that's how you pronounce Green. I just call her Alex.
Oh, true. Yeah.
So
I love their account,
She shares really cute vegan meals. You can tell that like she puts a lot of detail in like the photography and the staging of her plates. And for me, it just gives me a lot of like inspiration in terms of how I can like make my toppings, make my food look more appealing. Because she's always like sprinkling some little thing on it. Every meal is different. I think that that's another thing that you'll know if you're like going through these accounts for like food inspo, that you'll realize that like no two vegan like recipes
are the same. Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. It's that we're all just different. We're all just doing our own things. And I think that that is, a really good reminder that vegan food is not a monolith.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we're going to go on with another one of my recommendations, which is the Canadian African. So Afia is the best. She shares Ghanaian recipes. She actually just launched an ebook if you're looking to support her work.
Mm.
And she gives like food for thought as well. A lot of her posts are about like food accessibility, asking questions that many of us do not address within the vegan spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not afraid to like engage in those conversations. And because she's a scientist, she also has this very, like she'll like ask, like do polls on her stories and stuff, and will summarize a lot of the different perspectives and offer a very nuanced, I guess like she'll provide her opinion, yes, but she also like balances it out with what other people are saying and what other people are like thinking. And I think that if you're like new to veganism, and if you're from like any African country, honestly, and you're looking to veganize your traditional meals, I think that in terms of West African food, it's like a good, yeah, good resource. Let's see. Is there anyone else that you would recommend?
Yeah, what they post is great. Actually, I'm a big up their post.
So,
yeah.
So who do you recommend also?
Vegan Jovia.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They're like one of the smaller sort of accounts, but I think it's nice when you get like sort of that kind of wholesome content. It just seems very authentic, you know?
More realistic too.
Yeah, just like, and I love it that they be posting like very liquidy smoothie bowls as well. And you with no toppings. I'm like, I feel seen. Like this, when I was like, yes, come through.
Cool. I think that another, I mean, there are so many accounts and I follow a lot of them if you're looking for vegan inspo. I think that another one that I love is One Great Vegan. She's like the musical chef. And she recently did like this Q&A, and in her polls really reiterated the sentiment that you can remake anything in a vegan version.
Yeah.
Of course, we discussed maybe not hard-boiled eggs, but
we're waiting on that one. It's a yet, not a never,
but
with hard-boiled eggs.
But for the most part, like, you can definitely make it work. And so I definitely recommend looking at her account and the recipes that she shares and supporting her work as well. There's also So Ellie's Vegan. So yeah, her recipes, I don't know if she really shares too many recipes, but her food picks are pristine. I look at that and I'm like drooling all the time.
True.
A lot of the accounts that we're speaking about here, I made a post for Veganuary where I like tagged a few of them in there, and I'll be sure to big up these accounts more so on social media as well. But yeah, there are so many places that you can go to for food inspo, and please don't limit yourself to looking at the top white vegan influencers, because there are so many other amazing vegan content creators out there that you can learn from and that you can draw inspiration from. And if you're looking for recipes, there are a ton of vegan recipes that are free. You can go on Instagram and Google and just like hashtag.
Or just hashtag vegan just recipes. Or even just Google what you want to make and then put the word vegan at the end.
Yeah.
You could be like bolognese. Or put it at the beginning, actually. That's probably better. Be like vegan and then insert the what you want to make. Like shepherd's pie.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know, stroganoff. Or what, literally what have you. You will find an image and someone who's talking about it. Why? Because nod to previous episode, the social media is a really great tool for connecting.
Yes. Look at us weaving all of this in.
It's like we planned this, Sita.
It's almost like we recorded these episodes back to back.
Okay.
Know?
No, we did not. Don't tell the kids these lies.
Oh my gosh.
Each episode is recorded.
It's not magic. It's not magic. It's a podcast. Oh my gosh. We're coming to you this season with a little more structure.
We're live. Actually, we're live right now.
I know.
You're listening
I'm
to us live.
You.
What?
You've said that like when we started season two, like you did like this season we're gonna come to you with a little more structure, okay? It's gonna be more structured than previously, and I'm like, what are you referring?
Okay,
to?
I don't think that we actually made it into the podcast though. I think we re-recorded, and now you're just spilling my dirty laundry out in front of all these children.
They're not children.
They're kids.
Okay. So that was it.
We've
today's
detracted far enough.
Can I? So that's it for today's episode, the one about vegan food. We discussed everything from transitioning slowly, veganizing your favorite meals, getting over your cow cheese addiction.
And your hard-boiled egg addiction.
Oh, I also have a blog post actually on Patreon about getting over your cow cheese addiction. If you're looking for more in-depth tips, you know where to go for that. And yeah, we like bigged up a ton of vegan recipe creators that you can go check out and support their work. Many of them have ebooks out, right? Because if you're asking for the recipe, they have recipes to give you, right?
Yeah.
Pay up and you will receive. And yeah. You shall receive. So,
yeah. And usually it's like a couple dollars.
Exactly. It's like very affordable. Also, I know that we mentioned this at the top of the episode, but please don't forget to rate and review us
like
on Apple Podcasts.
And subscribe.
It really makes a huge difference. And you could connect with us on social media. We are Goats and Oats Podcast on Instagram.
On Instagram.
And we might, you know, drift into other platforms.
Something, yeah.
We have plans.
But for now,
it's on Instagram. That's
and
where you can go.
Your reviews are where?
Apple Podcasts.
Thank you. So hopefully with that, we'll be reading your reviews next week, and thanks for joining.